Accession number 4616, room number 4.
Flight Lieutenant Lucas, Reel 4. What difference did it make to your work as a wireless operator, being in a closed cockpit aircraft? Did it affect your work very much?
Yes, it seemed there didn't seem so much noise, mainly. And, of course, in the first instance, all our work was done in the Morse code, you see, continuous wave wireless. As an operator, it was continuous wave, but of course the pilot was also fitted with speech radio telephone for when he was coming into land and all that sort of thing. He could speak to the control station on the ground, but from our point of view, it was all continuous wave in Morse, and you had a pretty good range where you could still hear our own station when you're over Berlin. So the improvement in wireless was noticeable in the fact that you would work a few hundred miles.
Was it a lot warmer?
Yes, I suppose it was. Generally speaking, it was warmer and more comfortable. You could get up and have a walk around, stretch your legs, things like that, you see.
How big was the crew on the planes you were flying?
I think there was five on those. There was two pilots, front gunner, rear gunner, and wireless operator, five. Because when you were over enemy territory, the wireless operator left his set, because you didn't touch your set while you were over enemy territory. And you went on the top gun, you see.
Was this on the Wellingtons? Or
on the Wellingtons, yes.
How big was the crew on the Harrow?
Same, pretty well. About five of you. Yes.
What was the accommodation like in the Harrow for the wireless operator?
You had your own little table, your two sets mounted in front of you, and your little table to write on, and quite a comfortable seat to sit on, I suppose. It was comfortable. Never worried us anyhow. And as I say, when you're over in enemy territory, you used to leave that, of course, because you didn't touch your wireless, so you'd give your position away. You used to go up and man the upper gun, you see. Yeah, a bit of fun there, shooting anything you saw.
Had you had training as an air gunner?
Yes. I missed that out, actually. I had my training as an air gunner when I was at Ammon in the late 20s. I was qualified as an air gunner then. So I knew how to handle it.
How can you describe what your training as an air gunner would constitute?
Yes, it constituted mainly of just shooting at a target. That's about all I remember about it. There was no theory or anything like that. You had to be able to strip your gun down, put it together again, and shoot at a given target. If you didn't shoot your own wing off, you were all right, sort of thing, you know. Because that has been known, you know. You could follow a target around and go right across your own wing, you see. You could do that quite easily in the old nine-axle we were in those days. You could do that. But there was nothing special about it, just to be able to fire a gun and shoot at the target. That was all it was. Nothing very special.
What target did you shoot at?
Ground targets, mainly. Or you might shoot on a film camera, shoot at a moving target. But as far as I can remember, you just did the shooting and they said, OK, you've done 12 hours with a gun, you're now a qualified air gunner, that was it.
Didn't they give you a test?
Yes, they gave you the test, as I say, shooting at ground target or an air target. But I can't remember how they tested you, really, but I know they gave you some sort of test, shooting at moving targets and ground targets. That was about all. And that was about 1927, I think, when I did that, so I can't remember any details about that.
What type of guns were you using?
The old Vickers. I don't know what number it was, but it was a Vickers gun. I can't remember the number.
Was that an easy gun to use?
Yes, quite easy. Changed the added belt on that, you know, belt of bullets, and you change the belt now. Yes, it was quite easy.
What about bomb aiming? Did you get training in that?
No, no training in that at all. Actually, on during the war, of course, they had trained bomb aimers for that job. They were trained. We didn't touch anything at all during the war in that way. But, as I say, at Amman, where I was there, it was a comparatively new thing. We just press a button and drop them off the racks if you had them, or you just pick them up off the floor and chuck them over the side when you thought you were about right, you know. Very haphazard affair.
Did the wireless operators have any other duties besides bomb aiming and air gunning?
Well, once again, going back to the Amman sort of thing, you have to help with the maintenance of the aircraft. I mean, cleaning plugs, changing plugs and that sort of thing, or minor fitters jobs, you'd do those, because, as I said right at the start, at Houghton and Flowerdown, we were trained to do a lot of the engineering side of the aircraft, you see. You had to use lathes and all that sort of thing, and you had a pretty good idea of the engineer's job. Yes.
How many planes did 214 Squadron have?
About the same again, I think about 12. Three flights.
What markings did the squadron have?
Oh, I forget what the markings had. I know they had big letters on them, but I forget what they were.
Were they camouflaged, the bombers, or in grey?
Yes, no, they were all camouflaged. They had various colourings on them, you know, too. Mainly, you know, coloured, various colours and irregular strips and all that sort of thing. Yes, they were camouflaged to a certain degree.
Were the Harriers camouflaged as well?
No, I don't remember them being camouflaged in peacetime. I can remember the Harriers. CO sent for me one day. I was running the section. I was a sergeant running the section at the time, and he said, got some special trip on. He said, I want your best wireless operator, because I was covering the section, see all the men in the section and the actual equipment and everything else. So I said, oh, corporal so-and-so, or something like that, or sergeant so-and-so. So he said, well, if he's the best operator you've got, he said, why isn't he in charge of the section? Why are you in charge of it? Anyhow, the old chappy, I always remember, he had his own way. I had to fly with him that night. And whenever he, just before the war, that was. And, no, it wasn't. It was just after the war had started, that's right. And after that, whenever he flew, he didn't fly on every operation, but whenever he flew, he always insisted on me flying with him. That's how I did my operational flying, because he caught me on this racket in the first case about the best man in the section. He said, if you're in charge of the section, you should be the best man. And I went on that trip with him that night, and everything went well. It was some special trip, I forget what it was, and everything went well, so he seemed satisfied, and he used to more or less collar me every time he went flying, which wasn't too often, you know, once a week or once a fortnight, something like that. I did quite a few trips with him, operational trips.
But what stage before the war did you feel that war with Germany was going to be inevitable?
A couple of years, at least a year before, even when, was it Chamberlain, was it went to Munich, was it Chamberlain? I was almost remember they came back. I was up on the top of an aeroplane on the top wing, and somebody came along and said, Chamberlain's back and it's going to be peace. Somebody shouted out to me. And I remember coming down off the top of this aeroplane. And from that moment onward, we all felt sure that there was going to be a war.
Why did you think there was going to be a war?
I don't know. Just because he said there was going to be peace, that's all. But from the moment he said there's going to be peace, we all felt sure there was war. And what is more, that in that year, we had several Germans come over and a liaison visit, and I had the job of showing these Germans all around the wireless equipment on these Harriers, which they had at the time, and I had to show them all our wireless equipment and tell them all about it and what frequency we worked on and everything else. I was told to do it, and yet a few months later we were at war with them. Very queer, that.
About what month would that have been?
Oh, probably about 10 months or something before the war started. In that year, after Chamberlain had said peace in our time, sort of thing, and we all got friendly with Germany, and they came over and visited us, and I suppose we went over and visited them, some of our people.
What impression, if any, did you get of those Germans?
I got the impression that they knew what they were doing. They were looking for something, sort of thing, and they knew what they were looking for. So they wanted to know all about everything anyhow. Yes, they seemed to me that they were looking for something.
Did you hold anything back, or did you just obey orders?
Just obeyed orders. What we told them wasn't really anything out that they couldn't have found out for themselves. They could listen to what we were doing and tell what frequency and wavelength it was on and work that out for themselves, couldn't they?
Did the approach of war affect the equipment you were receiving in the late 30s?
Only one thing I remember, one difference. They brought out what they called IFF just before the war started. IFF meant Identification Friend or Foe. And it was a very, very high frequency transmitter that you had on the set. It had nothing to do with it, you just switched it on when you got on the aeroplane and that was it. And it sent out a signal, and ground stations or fighters could identify you from this signal. That was the only thing that sort of put us onto it. So,
what type of a signal was it?
It was a Morse signal. But it didn't send a message anymore, so now it sent three dots and four dashes or something like that, you see, on a special frequency. And we used to change the frequency quite occasionally, so that the Germans couldn't follow us too much. And used to just send us dots and dashes and change the frequency probably once a month or something like that. We used to.
Did you change the frequency according to instructions you received?
According to instructions you receive on a knob that you had, you know, probably six or eight positions on this knob, that's all.
By this time, by the
way... I'm not breaking any official secrets out, am I?
By this time, by the late 30s, had wireless equipment improved very much as compared with 1922 when you first joined the RAF?
Not a great deal, no. It had improved, but not a great deal. It didn't improve until the war. When the war started, then all sorts of new ideas came along. In fact, I was one of the first people that ever did anything with radar. Radar was unheard of before the war. I went on a course to a science museum in London. 3 weeks course on radar.
Which year was this?
1940, 41. Yeah, 40 or 41, I can't remember. Probably the beginning of the war anyhow.
And what did the course consist of?
The equipment that was used for radar, and the first set that was ever used for radar, which gave you a picture of the ground in front of you. That was the first one, because I remember on one trip I did the picture of Cologne Cathedral, and after we'd passed over, I said to the pilot, after we'd bombed Cologne, I said to the pilot, I said, you've knocked the cathedral down. And we went back and reported the fact that we knocked the cathedral down when we hadn't knocked it down at all. I got the blame for that because I told him so.
Well, on my
screen it disappeared, you see. I don't know why it was. It's one of those queer things that happened. But I saw the cathedral there on the screen, and after we'd passed over, it disappeared. So I said the bombs must have hit the cathedral. It's gone. And we reported the fact that we'd ruined the cathedral. But it turned out that we hadn't. I would remember that.
When war broke out, can you recollect the actual outbreak of war?
Yes.
Can you recollect the impression it made on you?
Yes, I should think so. Sheer excitement, I think, would be the best way to do it. I was posted from 214 Squadron to 99 Squadron straight away at the beginning of the war. And, that's right. And it was exciting. I posted an operational squadron on the race course there. and you know, we were doing a real job. It was more excitement than anything else, I should think, how it affected us, really.
Were you at all fearful or apprehensive?
No, I don't think so, no. We felt that we were going to go, you know, what we were there for, we were going to do it, that's all.
What did you feel our prospects would be against the German Air Force?
Well, we had very poor prospects at the first couple of years of the war, because the Germans had a much better air force than we did.
Did you know that on
yes,
the day?
Yes, we knew that fairly well.
On the day
well.
Wars yes. broke out?
Yes, it was a fairly well-known fact. I mean, if a German came over here, you see, we could put up 10 fighters or something, but if we went over Germany, you could put up 100 fighters. That was the different sort of thing, you see. I only did night raid. I did one day raid, but I mostly did night raids over there, and my experience was, though, that if you saw a fighter come towards you and you fired at him, 19 times out of 20, he'd sheer off and disappear. They didn't seem to want to take it up. And not like our fighters. I think our fighters made a much better job of it than the German fighter did. I won't say about the bombers, but the fighters didn't seem to relish it so much.
Did you feel on the outbreak of war that the Germans were going to try to deliver a knockout blow against us?
Yes. I'll tell you for why, because the first few months of the war, there was no war, was there? I don't know if you remember these facts, but the first year of the war, nothing happened. We did a raid or two here and a raid or two there. Very, very few Germans came over here, but suddenly, about in 1940, towards the end of 1940, suddenly the Germans really started the war. But up till then, they hadn't done so. I should think it'd be towards the end of 1940 before they started bombing England. Seriously. Yes, it'd be towards the end of 1940 before they seriously bombed England, and then they did really. And after that point, we knew that they got the better of us. And when they first started on us, we couldn't hold them back.
So at first, when nothing happened, you thought that this was because they were planning some big knockout blow?
We thought they were getting ready for something big, which apparently they were, you see. Because when they did start, they made quite a mess of us. But and it took us at least 2 years after that to get really going. I think it'd be about 1943 before our fighters were really getting top of them, and the bombers were, our bombers were, we were going all sorts of places and getting away with it fairly well. But the first couple of years of the war, we were afraid of the Germans. That's what it amounted to.
Before the war started, did you ever go on any big exercises in the RAF?
We did one trip just before the war started to impress the Germans when it looked like war. We flew all right down the French-German border, you know, right down the border and over the Alps into the Mediterranean. And then we came back again just to impress the Germans, you know, about 60 bombers there was on that trip. Went down to impress the Germans how good we were. And they must have had a quiet laugh, I think.
Which squadron were you in then?
That was in 214 squadron I was there, on Harrows, I believe it was.
Can you remember the date?
No. It was in that year, I think. It was probably 1939. But which month it was, I can't remember.
But before the outbreak of war?
Before the outbreak of war, yes.
Where were you based for that exercise?
Well, we're still Feltwell. Yes, I can't remember. Yeah. We're still at Feltwell then. And there was probably about eight bomber squadrons went on that trip.
So when did you rendezvous with the other squadrons?
At Manston, down in Kent, you know, Manston, do you? We met there, we landed there and refueled at Manston. And from there we went right down the German border, French-German border.
All 60 of you together?
All 60 of us together, yes.
Did you do anything, or just fly
along
the border?
No, just flew along, that's all. Did nothing at all, except let them see that we were there, that's all.
Did you see the Luftwaffe?
No, never saw any of them at all. Nobody came to. We stopped on French territory, you see, over French territory. We didn't go over German territory. Stopped over French territory, and that was it.
Did Did you land in France?
No. No, we did the round trip, came back to Manston.
So what range would the Harrow have?
Well, I think Harrow could just about do Berlin and back, but it would be a bit of a tight squeeze, because I think we had to put extra tanks on the Wellington to get to Berlin. I'm sure we had to carry an extra tank, I think, to get to Berlin and back on a Wellington.